Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. Today we have a highly anticipated episode by no one probably but myself who lost sleep over it, and that is Senator Jordan Steele-John. How are you?
I am excited to be here, Jay.
Now, I always make it very clear that I'm not a political person. I don't have any real political views, except around areas that I'm interested in, such as disability, ADHD. And I follow people that really share the same views just because I think they're awesome. And I always try to edge my way in, comment my own point of view as well. And Jordan has been so forthright in disability rights for so long that he was just someone that I had to get on. And I'm so excited to have you.
It's great to be here. I've been following your work for a while as well. And when it turned out we could set this chat up, I've been really excited.
Awesome. Well, I have been in typical ADHD style where I have lost sleep over it, been so excited, and then also nearly missed the time. So here we are. One thing I did want to mention was, Jordan, before we get started, did you have any experience in neurodiversity, lived experience, or anyone that you know before we get started?
Well, yeah. So I'm here today having this chat with you, Jane, with multiple hats on, really, figuratively. I'm here as obviously as a member of parliament and part of the federal decision-making space where a lot of disability policy is made and crafted, and we'll get to some of that later. But I also am here as somebody who is a disabled person. And for most of my life, I'm 30 years old now, most of my life, what I've understood that to mean is that I'm a person with cerebral palsy, and that's what my disability is. That's what brings me into the disability community. Recently, I have been diagnosed also with ADHD. And as far as I know, I am the only ADHDer, maybe the first parliamentarian to be open about having an ADHD diagnosis. I'm sure there are other ADHDers who are MPs, but in terms of talking about it publicly, we haven't been able to find a record of anybody else doing that. So I think it may be a bit of a first.
It actually reminds me a little bit of the psychologist. They recently, only in the last year or so, have come out and said, I'm proudly autistic, I'm proudly ADHD. Because before they weren't able to speak publicly about it or show any lived experience. So I think that's a real testament to how far society has come with ADHD.
It's been a journey, Jane. It's been a real journey. I've experienced a lot of the ups and the downs, some of the barriers that often come with the diagnosis journey. I've heard from so many people along the way about what those barriers look like in our community, in our country, whether it's cost or wait time. And some of those things for me personally have looked different as an MP, but the amount of money placed on the diagnosis itself was a big enough barrier on its own. But also I helped my mum and my brother to get an ADHD diagnosis as well. And it's been a really interesting process to begin working in this space, which I've been passionately engaged in as a policymaker for years, but then also to kind of really and officially realize that you've been working in that space as somebody with lived experience as well. It takes a moment to adjust to, but I'm very proud to be in there as an ADHDer and to bring that experience to this conversation and these areas, because lived experience matters. It really does matter. And we've got to create a conversation, and we have to create spaces where people can feel open about, you know, their access needs, their communication requirements, and also to celebrate their identity as neurodivergent people. And that is where so much of the hope and the joy is found in our community, I think.
There's so much that I'm loving about this conversation already, but let me just highlight one thing. There is always that stigma around ADHD that perhaps those people aren't successful, or they're lazy, or they're useless. And I think for yourself, particularly being so successful in Parliament, would you mind sharing about how you think ADHD may have affected your life up until now, or how that's been for you?
Look, I think you're right to say, Jane, that there is still far too much stigma when it comes to ADHD. People have shared with me over the years, over the course of their SEDD inquiry that we initiated as the Greens into ADHD supports and services, and just through the course of working alongside people in my team with ADHD and in the broader community, that, yeah, that is still a really biting thing for many people. And it shouldn't be. We need to be really clear in saying, pushing back on that idea in every space that it might come up in. In Parliament, we did a bit of research to find out how much other MPs had even spoken about ADHD in the preceding 5 years. And we found about five examples. Three of them was myself talking about how ADHD support should be provided under the NDIS. And the other two were references in parliamentary debates where MPs were using ADHD as a put down to one of their colleagues. So I think we do need to push back on it. When I reflect on my life, I think that I had a very unusual childhood in many ways. I was home educated by my mum, and so was my brother. And turns out all three of us have ADHD. So in many ways, because of the way that my mum supported me in my educational journey, because of the way that home education, as mum put it into practice, was very individualized and very kind of follow your passions and interests. And another word for those things are hyperfocuses and where you get the dopamine from. I feel that my mum's work and sacrifice in many ways, taking on that profound responsibility as an ADHD parent herself, who did not know she was an ADHD parent herself. She did the work, even though often, like, her nervous system would have been totally fried from just that alone, to ensure that me and Harry, that's my brother, didn't experience some of the negative pushback that occurs and the stigma that occurs in often in educational environments. It's a testament to the strength, I think, of certain stigmas around ADHD, though, that even though I managed to avoid many of those formal education structures, either when I got to uni or in other spaces, I still felt the sense of self-criticism. I still engaged in the deep self-criticism when you couldn't do the things that other people would do. Why are you always late? Why can't you remember X, Y, Z? Why is it that you left this till the last minute? Or, you know, all of those things. And it was an interesting, it was a deep emotional moment to discover that there was a reason for some of those things that was not just me being, you know, unable or unwilling or in some sense, you know, broken or a failure. So there was a moment of realization of that. And then an internal journey, I guess, through reflection on your life and how it's played out, through to a space of joy and celebration. That's something that I've experienced, and many people have shared similar kinds of journeys with me too, you know, from revelation to ADHD grief to then coming to a sense of pride and celebration, and then the nuance of just integrating it into your everyday and your identity. And I'm really happy to have had the opportunity to have the moment of self-understanding, and it fires me in a whole new way, adds another layer to the deep commitment that I already had to fighting for some of these barriers to come down for people, to see what it has meant for me, but also for my mum and for my brother. People should not have to work as hard as often so many to get access to the support that they need, the information that they need, and the medications and peer support and modifications to environment that they need and have a right to. It just isn't acceptable the way it is, and we need people in positions of power to get a move on and work with people to change it.
Oh, I completely agree. I completely agree. I'm going to refrain from the temptation of asking about the ADHD medication reforms. And I will direct people that I did do an episode with New South Wales Mental Health Minister, Rose Jackson.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yes, I did.
Yeah, apparently. So Rose contacted me too because she wanted to explain the ADHD reforms that had taken place in New South Wales. And if anyone would like to know more about that, yes, it's New South Wales based, but it will be rolled out nationally, unless I'm wrong, Jordan. It looks very much like it will be to me.
Yeah, so it's interesting. And again, I heard you didn't want to derail it into that space, but I can give a little bit of context there if it's useful. Because these reforms that we've seen in each state were a recommendation of the inquiry that the Greens initiated into ADHD supports and services. So we heard directly from people that one of the challenges they were experiencing to accessing ADHD supports and services was diagnosis. The other was cost. And, you know, binding it all together was wait time. And there are a number of things that need to be done to address those issues, one of which is to make sure that if you currently have ADHD as a diagnosis and you have been prescribed a medication, that you are able to fill that script wherever you are in the country. Because turns out we as ADHDers don't just stay within the boundaries of our states. And then the other issue, of course, was, you know, could we find ways to lower cost and increase access by shifting the professions that are able to diagnose or to prescribe? So we bound all that up together in a recommendation, which the federal government agreed to, which was good. It's the only one of the recommendations that we made that they formally fully agreed to. And we have seen state governments then, starting with Western Australia, announce a reform process, which was really good to see. Unfortunately, one of the byproducts of that reform process, where we've seen an opening up of the professions that can offer either diagnosis or prescription, was that every state slightly did it differently, which again is a bit of a reflection of the problem here, that every state does it differently. So we've been working as an office to lobby the different state and territory governments together with our State Greens colleagues to get them to come together and agree on a kind of uniform approach. Any day now, there will be a meeting of all state and territory health and mental health ministers together with the federal government to try to land an agreement on a nationally consistent approach. Victoria is the only state that is yet to say, yes, that's what we'll do. So every state other than Vic has said, prescribing diagnosis, we are going to change that in such a way that it creates more access for the community via a pathway for GPs to play an increased role in that space. Vic has been a holdout. So we've been working with our Vic Greens colleagues to put that pressure on. And we hope to hear any day what the outcome of that meeting has been. It's due to be very soon. So that's where we are at the moment. We need Vic to come on board with that nationally consistent approach, and also the NT. They are holding out as a territory too.
I love that. I'm kind of like already thinking about how would I get access to that information for when it does come out. Where could we find that? Or do you come out with that? How do we get that information as it happens?
Well, it will probably, and this is very much into the kind of policy nerd weeds of the thing, but at a formal body known as the Federal and Federal, State and Territory Health Ministers Council will publish a communique, which is just a fancy word for a statement, saying this is what the ministers have agreed, and this is what they haven't been able to agree, and this is what they will, you know, talk about next, basically, based on where they have and haven't been able to land. So that will be published on the website for that forum literally any day now. Could be happening right now, could happen on Monday. We think they're meeting somewhere in the next week or so. They're always a little bit cagey about that because they want to be able to control the narrative that comes out of the meeting. But basically, we will get that info. And then if it's what our community needs, amazing. Celebration. Because it is the ADHD community that has pushed and advocated so wonderfully for these changes. And together with the Greens and others in Parliament have taken it from, you know, something that was talked about not at all or only at the fringes to at the heart of decision-making. That's us. We've done that together as a community. If it's what we need, we will celebrate. If it's not quite there, we will, okay, regroup, keep pushing. How do we get what we need? Because my belief is we as a community should set the bar of success at where we need it to be, you know, like, and always be in a space that allows us to be, what should I say, confident in the knowledge that we are not alone in the experiences that we are having. Neither are we alone in wanting to fight for something better. And together we are incredibly powerful. So my hope is that if it's not quite there, we will keep pushing together for what we actually need in that space.
Oh, I love that. It reminds me of when we launched season 3 in April. I said, I am so sick of hearing that the system isn't built for us. I don't care when the system was, who it was built for. I don't give a shit. But what can we do now? Let's stop saying that and let's actually do something. And yep. I believe that really needs to be around educating neurotypical people, for example. Let's stop with awareness and let's talk about what we can do, what they can do to be more inclusive in day-to-day life. Because as you said, we can make changes and we are seeing that happen now. So when I hear about the system wasn't built for us, I'm like, I don't want to hear that anymore. We actually need to start changing that. That we can't just keep saying that. It should be built for us as well.
Be built for us as well. Absolutely. I think one of the sayings that the disability community has had for decades now is nothing about us without us, which means that the systems created that we need to utilize should be created with us. It's a fact that many of those systems as they currently exist now were not created with us, and that is a big part of why they don't work. But if there is a politician or bureaucrat that looks at that status quo and thinks it's acceptable, then they really need to think again, because it's not. And we are, you know, right, I think, to say, no, let's rebuild it. Let's reshape it. Let's redesign it so that it works, because it's for us that it exists, and a happy byproduct of including disabled people, neurodivergent people in this design process is you just get a better policy outcome. You get a better system. You get something that actually works.
Well, this is a perfect segue to the NDIS. When I stripped back this year, what do I actually want to achieve this year? What do I actually want this podcast to do? And I put my number one was to create lived experience within the NDIS. My number one, if I could have give some type of opinion or some type of voice to the 1500 jot forms that I've got in my email about what is actually happening day to day, that would be job done, ticked. That's all I want.
Yep.
So when the NDIS changes came out, how was your reaction when you heard that announcement or that speech?
So first of all, it was shock, really. Like that moment of shock and disbelief despite yourself. And I say despite myself because we as a community, the Australian disability community over the last 10 years or so, we've kind of lost count of the number of times that the Australian government has made announcements that affect us without consulting us, you know, taking us by surprise and just hoping that the kind of shock and awe of the announcement will kind of give them the space and the moment of time to just ram it through, get it done, regardless of what it means for us. But despite that, every single time they do a new version of that, there is that initial moment, and I heard this from a lot of people as well, there's a little moment of like, no, not again, surely. And then you move from that space, and I certainly did, to deep unhappiness and frustration with this announcement. Particularly a neurodivergent parent is to exist often in a state of perpetual system overwhelm. And if we provided with the support, like if people are able to access the good supports that they need or get them for their family, then they can build really good positive structures that create space for processing and healing and self-identity and that kind of stuff. But often there are too many barriers, or many barriers between them and getting those things. So really day to day, week to week, there's a lot of challenge and there's a lot of emotional energy that needs to be expended to navigate through systems to get the things you need, particularly for your kids. And then people in government make decisions that often, like, take the little bit of something you feel that you've been able to pull together, to coordinate, to identify, to get funded, to, you know, to wrap them around either yourself or your child. And often, you know, it's the child that gets prioritized. You know, you just want to make things okay for your kids. And then a minister gets up on a stage, or a prime minister gets up on a stage and announces a massive change with no clarity and no certainty except uncertainty. And not only does it appear that they haven't thought of what it might mean for kids, they haven't thought of what it means for parents that are in that state of, you know, struggle and trying to make it all work. And now they have to deal with, oh, there's thriving kids, you know, and this will probably mean, you know, quite a lot of change, but there isn't any detail for people. So my response was shifted to unhappiness in thinking about what it would mean for the kids potentially affected by it, but also what it would mean for their parents who are already doing it tough enough as it is.
I love everything you've said, and I think you've really hit that nail on the head. I did a poll recently on Instagram, which I appreciate you sharing, and it was around what was actually affecting the parents, the mums, the most. And hands down, exactly what you said, it is the not knowing. And, you know, when I did that recording with Minister Rose Jackson, I actually felt for a sliver of a moment that this shit matters. Like, I thought, I have got these 1,500 jot forms. I'm an unpaid advocate. I give all of the profits I get back into ADHD diagnosis for women, for adults. I just felt like I was about to make a change within the NDIS. I thought, I had Nicole Rogerson from Autism Awareness Australia. I have 1,500 jot forms that I've hammered myself to create a report from. And I thought, I am on the cusp of what I want to achieve in my whole life is just to get some change. And I've run an NDIS provider myself. I've run DVA providers, and I've got 3 kids on the NDIS. And I was like, I actually can tell you some great places to save money and some great places to put it back in. And I have got all of this ready to go. When that announcement came out, and it wasn't just the announcement, it was the language, it was the way he spoke, and it was very clear to a lot of the advocates and to people generally that he had not had any at all lived experience into that speech, because if he had of, he wouldn't have used the words or the language that he said, which I thought was hands down offensive and showed a lack of education. Now, he can't be across everything. Let's just play that game for a moment. But where are his advisors? Like, he didn't even realize how offensive what he said was. And that took me, I reckon, 2 weeks. I just felt like giving up. I just thought, this is just not going anywhere. These people are not getting it. And it has taken a long time to get myself back up, let alone all the parents that don't have the type of motivation and interest into this area that I do. It has absolutely floored the parents. I love the way that you spoke about that. If we move into the program Thriving Kids that has been introduced with little detail, is there any detail that you maybe you can give us that we would love to know, or any detail you could give us at all?
Well, I would love to be able to share with you more detail, Jane, because I know that so many people are desperately in need of it now. They want to know what the government is proposing and what it will mean for them. And fair enough too, like, that is the basic expectation that we should be able to have of government. I unfortunately can only share with you the top lines that have been made public anywhere, because we've been looking day after day for the government to announce more information, and they haven't done it. As we sit here and talk now, there are a couple of key things that I can say that they've kind of made public, but maybe not in ways or in places that everybody listening would have heard about. So there was a mention in the minister's speech of the introduction of additional Medicare items that would be available to kids that are between the ages of 0 to 9. And there were a couple of examples of things that may be able to be claimed on using those Medicare items. So speech pathology or occupational therapy, which we've long argued as the Greens that there should be more Medicare items available to neurodivergent kids. Particularly at the last election, one of our key points was, let's create a way so that we can provide ADHD diagnosis for free under Medicare through the creation of Medicare items. So it would be great to do that. The unfortunate thing, though, is that they haven't really, well, they haven't full stop followed up that comment in the minister's speech with any more detail on either what specific items would be included or whether those items would be crafted in such a way that they can guarantee the government there won't be an out-of-pocket cost for speech pathology or for OT, for example. And that's one of the key questions that I have and that I'm hearing from people is, if we're going to move from NDIS to a different system of support, are you going to guarantee me right now that I won't be able to, won't have to be or required to pay a co-payment? So that's one of the things we know, but even in that, there's a lack of clarity. There's also been the announcement of an advisory board that will be headed by Professor Frank Oberclade. He's done some quite detailed work from what I've been able to see, but it's been very much in the area of school programs for neurodivergent kids. And now that creates the impression that what thriving kids will be, like, may use the school environment as its delivery, the space in which it's delivered, which, you know, there are some positives to that idea, but also given the high level of school refusal among neurodivergent kids and many parents turning to home education or other approaches, there's also questions around what does that tangibly, you know, mean as well. That's the extent of what we've been able to define, like, basically, that's the extent of what the government has said, which is not really enough. And it leaves a number of outstanding questions. For example, if the age cohort that they're looking at here is between 0 to 9, well, then what does this mean for kids over the age of 9? What does this mean for autistic adults? When we talk about the programs or the services that will be funded through Thriving Kids, can the government guarantee that they will be neuroaffirming? Which is a really important, you know, question in a lot of people's minds. They've been asking me, they've been messaging me, they've been coming up to me in the street. And one of the things that parents want to know is whether the therapies or support that they have been able to identify after long work that work for their children, that may well be neuroaffirming, will still be able to be funded. That's a basic question that people should be able to have answered by the government already.
So one of the biggest things that I think that parents want to know, so I did a survey of the ADHD mum audience, and we found that 70% of the mums on here have got children on the NDIS for whatever reason. And they're probably attracted because I am so NDIS focused. I always have been. This whole podcast, to be honest, was built on the NDIS. The reason it was because I was having coffee with all of these people. I'm a bit of a legislation whiz. I don't know why. It's a very odd thing. I have a photographic memory with legislation. So wow. I read it once. I like the Bible, except for NDIS legislation. Ask me anything. I know everything about it. I'm the oracle of the NDIS, which is why I believe I should have a seat at the table of the advocacy, just putting that out there to whoever's listening. So I was having coffees with all these people, and the reason I was having coffee was to show them how to access the NDIS to their children in a way that didn't make them lose their mind. Now, I have made all of those resources for free on the website because I don't believe in charging anybody because the whole thing is such a mess at the moment. I opened all of my resources and guides today and I thought, I'm going to get back into it. I'm going to help people. I'm going to sort this out. I cannot make head or tail of it at the moment,
yep,
which is terrifying. And so when people email me or they come up to you on the street, they say things to me like, we've been reviewed. We've got 30 days. We've got 60 days, whatever it is. Should I even bother? Because the amount of time and energy it takes to get functional capacity assessments, often you have to pay for it yourself. It's not even included or you've gone over budget. You have to try and beg and plead to get in with a psychologist, right? Then when you get there, you have to try and get your child, who probably isn't going to play a game, to actually do the assessments. You have to go through the absolute emotional toll, which I cannot say how awful it is, to talk for hours about all the things that your child doesn't do well. It is soul destroying. I am a hardy woman, but that nearly broke me doing three in a row and 1-1. When people say to me, should I bother? What can I do? I don't even know what to say at this point, to be honest. And I was wondering if you have any ideas on that. For all of the mums that are getting reviewed at the moment, I actually don't know what to say.
I identify with what you've just said deeply, Jane, because in the last year, the number of people that have reached out to me and our team and said verbatim the same thing, that the system has changed so significantly since the government forced through the legislation last year, that they are being subject to reviews that they didn't expect. They're being given time frames that are just unworkable. They're being asked for new reports, even though they've just delivered the reports, paid for them, or in fact that they're just being removed. You know, the people are just being kicked off the scheme, having supports denied at a rate that we've not seen before. And through the official parliamentary processes, I've managed to nail down that this is happening. Like, it is. It's not just, we aren't imagining it. It is happening to us. They are initiating eligibility reassessments and reviews at a scale that we've not seen before. So what can we do in response to that? And I think that the most effective thing that we as a community can do is to speak up about it. I know that it often feels like politicians do not listen to and do not hear about what we think as members of the community. I can tell you from now being in there about 8 years that emails sent, that phone calls made do have an impact. And many politicians and people in positions of power actively spread the idea that that kind of advocacy doesn't have an impact in the hope that people won't use their power. And I think that if you are listening to this right now and you experience any of these things, you should know that you have a right to contact your MP about this. You have a right to send an email. You also are a really influential and powerful person in the lives of your friends and family who probably also really want to know about what is happening to you too. So tell them so that you then together can call the MP, can send the email, can make the phone call. Because we do as a community have one kind of power in our back pocket, if you like, which is that politicians will not have their job come election time if people don't vote for them. And they are really quite worried about losing their jobs at each election. And if enough people contact them and go, this is not okay, we expect better, that is one of the most effective avenues to get some of the changes that we need. Because ultimately, what we are experiencing as a community is the after effect of that legislation passing last year, because the Labour government and the Liberals thought that they could strip away a lot of our rights and protections, and that as long as they both agreed on it between the two of them, that, oh, well, what are disabled people and their families going to do? You know, there was a kind of, oh, well, you've got to vote for one of us. And that's not true. People do not have to do that. But between now and the election, we can actually be a bit noisy, a bit bulky, and let us not suffer in silence. Like, these people are making decisions that are negatively impacting our lives each and every day. And we shouldn't hold that alone. We should share it with our community, and we really should share it with the people who are responsible for that experience, whose decisions have caused us to struggle this way. They need to know what their actions have caused for people.
God, I love what you're saying. I love this conversation, because the 2 weeks that I spent I actually just felt like I was immobilized. I went on a date with my husband, which we do every 6 months, and I spent the entire time talking about the NDIS and how awful it was. And it has really affected everybody. On my website, there is a MP template where if you don't know what to say, you don't know how to say it, just copy and paste my template. So that's on the website. I've also got a jot form that you can give your experience about what you believe should change, how it's affected you for a provider and also for a child or a parent or an adult, whoever it is. Obviously, ADHD mums are overwhelmed. We've got so much to do. And exactly what you said, this is the reason I continue on, is because I just think I am a stubborn, stubborn person and I will not be silenced. And if there are people that don't necessarily understand the legislation like I do or have the psychology, the allied health background, that's okay. Get behind me. Just follow the templates that I'm giving you. But if there was only one thing that the listeners could do, or I was to put all of my things that I do into one, right? And we got really focused, what could we do or what can I help other people do that would really probably go the furthest?
Yep. Okay. So I can give you a very clear answer to that. Right now, there is a parliamentary inquiry going on through the Joint Standing Committee on the National Disability Insurance Scheme. It's the parliamentary oversight body for the scheme. I'm a member of that committee. And we're holding an inquiry, a series of hearings as part of an inquiry into the NDIS and what people's experience of it is. And we are looking for people as a committee to make submissions to that inquiry, to share with the committee their actual experience of the NDIS right now. I've heard you mention a number of times the amount of evidence that you've gathered, and I'm thinking, wow, that would make a fantastic submission to the inquiry. Anybody listening who would like to share their experience, we can provide the details so that you can link them in your links trees on your different accounts. But sharing your experience there does help us build that case study, that kind of bigger picture of what is happening to people right now through the official channels, so that there is an official record of what people are experiencing. So that is a solid, tangible thing that people can do right now. I also think, though, Jane, that there is a psychological and an emotional element to this that is just as important, which is that we as a community kind of have confidence in the fact that what we are asking for is very reasonable. What we are saying together collectively, and from what I've heard people say to me, the message is one of the simplest and most reasonable I've ever heard. It is, we as the people who rely on and use the NDIS, who need it, we understand that it needs to change in some ways to work better. We agree with that. We believe that if you announce changes to this scheme that we rely on without being clear about what those changes will mean for us and our families, that will cause and is causing us right now deep and unnecessary distress when our lives are already often tough enough. So please don't do that. Please give us the information that we need. Please work with us to build the changes that are genuinely needed. Let's do this together rather than have a situation where we once again have people in positions of power doing things to us. And that is so reasonable and so just that we say that. We should never let ourselves feel that we alone in that call, either in our struggles or indeed in the fight for something better. I'm not going to stop fighting for the rights of our community in Parliament and speaking up about these things. I don't think you will, Jane, either. Like, we've got each other in this moment and in this struggle.
I agree. I think that's a great place to finish off, because I'd love to know your thoughts on this, Jordan. I really feel like it has to be the neurodivergent people that make the change in inclusion. It has to be. Yes, we already have it tough enough. We've got all of the things that are already against us, right? We have got significantly, in some ways, harder lives. Parenting, for example, we have children that are independent, not as quick. So we have to do a lot more things for our children for a lot longer. There are so many barriers for the ADHD and the autistic community. However, I do not think that neurotypical people that generally have more time, money, and have more things, right? I don't think they're going to make any changes here. So it sucks that it's up to us, but it is up to us. And so I always say to people, even if you meet atypical, and I sometimes find typicals a little boring, so I try to kind of avoid them if I can, But I do try and make an effort to talk to those neurotypical mums to actually get them to understand inclusion properly. Because you're right, if we don't say anything or we wait for someone else, it's not going to happen. And it sucks it has to be us, but I actually think the ADHD mums are the community. We are the people that will make the change because we're forced to for our children. And it sucks it's going to have to be us, but I think it will. And I think banding together in the way that you've said is so important. I will absolutely put all of the links into the show notes. Have you got any final thoughts about inclusion or bringing it all together before we finish up?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Jane. I think that one of the main things that fills me full of hope right now in this moment is that there are about 5.5 million disabled people in Australia. We are roughly 20% of the population. That's actually the second or third largest minority group in Australia by numbers. We're beat only by men. Women, men, disabled people in the kind of Australian Bureau of Statistics of one of the groupings in Australia. But also in our community, whether it be in the neurodivergent parts of our community, people with physical disabilities, intellectual disabilities, whatever part of the community we come from and whatever part of the journey we're on or at the moment, we share a common experience of having a body or a mind that does not conform to the norms that held up to us by the status quo, by people in positions of power. And we diverge from those norms. And often people who benefit from the status quo push back and we experience the sting of that. But also because of our divergence from the norm, we have an opportunity and we do innovate and create and collaborate and come together and approach things differently in a way that gives us an incredible strength in our community together. So what gives me hope and what I think about when I think about inclusion is I think about the opportunity that we have to move, to push forward together, all 5.5 million of us in a campaign for disability justice, a campaign that is intersectional, a campaign that is committed to the idea that no body or mind will be left behind as we work together to make a better society, to make better systems for people. And that is exciting to me. And I am, you know, fired up about the opportunities to make things better for everybody in our community.
Oh, and look, and with that message, I think we'll finish up, but I will absolutely ask Jordan if he's available to come back. I've managed to talk him into it, which I'm very excited about.
Hooked me, Jane. You've hooked me.
Jordan, I really haven't heard a politician talk with so much passion. I think what we're really hearing here is a lived experience and the importance of that. And the fact that you are in the position that you're in gives me confidence that something will change. And so we really need to keep pushing. As you said, I love your message. I'm going to really take this energy and create a better NDIS review pamphlet, and I will update that and I will put it into the show notes too so we all have that information. I'll put the jot form in there and we will get everything together. Thank you so much for your time, Jordan. You've been an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jane. It's been wonderful to be part of this.
Quick announcement. Did you know that we have an ADHD Mums shop filled with resources designed just for you? These resources are packed with answers to the most frequently asked questions I get sent in via email. Everything from understanding ADHD and autism to practical tips for daily life. There's also a free assessment tool. If you're wondering about ADHD or autism for yourself or your little one, don't forget to check out the free assessment tool under free resources section on my website, adhdmums.com.au.